Time to run.
The Extra Mile Podcast, Galloway Edition. Galloway Edition Extra Mile Podcast is a podcast for runners of all abilities who want to learn everything they can about the Galloway Run Walk Run training method, right from Jeff himself. This podcast will run walk you right through Jeff's 30-week marathon training schedule and gently get you to the finish line of your full marathon injury-free.
Hello and welcome to episode 4B. Of the Extra Mile Podcast, Galloway Edition. Once again, you're stuck with me, Kevin, on my noontime run. Gorgeous day in Cincinnati. And just a few days after I posted episode 4A of this podcast, making the assumption that most or all of you have listened to that episode. First of all, if you haven't, you may want to go listen to that one first. But assuming you all have, then you already know that this is a companion episode to a discussion we had with Jeff in episode 4A concerning the Galloway training programs. Several months ago, when I approached Jeff with the idea for this particular podcast, and I put together a series of slides trying to sell him on the idea that he needed to be associated with a podcast, which, by the way, was not a hard sell. I put together a slide for Jeff that basically was a pyramid, and the best thing I can compare it to that you would probably be familiar with would be the food pyramid that we have here in the United States, telling you which foods to eat and which to avoid. In any case, in my Galloway pyramid, I put together all of the products that Jeff offers in hopes of spreading the word about the run, walk, run. At the bottom were items that were very easy for his customers to access. And as you moved up the pyramid, the barriers to access got a little bit harder. Maybe that was because, you know, you needed an iPod to listen, or it cost you a little bit of money to buy into it. But in any case, at the bottom was obviously Jeff's website. Free, as long as you have a computer and internet access. Tons of useful information. And then things like his books. You know, they cost a little bit of money, so as you go up the pyramid stack, his books are there. Podcasts do fit in. You do obviously need a web connection as well. And all the way up to the top, which I think I put Jeff's e-coaching. That is one-on-one coaching via email with Jeff himself. There's obviously a cost to that. But what impressed me about this pyramid and all of Jeff's products from the start were that no product steps on the feet of another product. In other words, when Jeff puts out a book, somebody doesn't buy it and then decide not to join up for a training program. Or nobody's going to download this podcast instead of e-coaching with Jeff. Makes sense? In any case, with respect to the training programs, in my mind, the thing it has over everything else on that list is, number one, the sense of community. I mean, you're showing up, you are meeting these friends, probably people that you will know and stay in touch with for the rest of your running life, as well as putting yourself out there. I think it's absolutely huge that when you decide to run a marathon and take on this rather daunting task, that you tell others what you're doing. Not just to make yourself more accountable, but maybe more importantly, to get the support you might need. That's what the training programs, in my mind, is all about. You're telling this whole group, look what I'm doing. Everybody in that group is telling each other that. And if you don't show up, somebody is going to track you down. And certainly don't discount the advantage of running with friends for 3, 4, 5 hours during a long run versus heading out there all by yourself. That's huge. Jeff has never actually come out and told me this, but it's not hard to notice how near and dear to his heart these training programs are. It might be tops on his list of all the things he does in an effort to spread the word and spread this lifestyle. It's with that in mind that I present to you a couple of items in today's podcast. The first thing you're going to hear is an interview I did with Chris Twiggs. Chris is an amazing runner in his own right and the national program director of the Galloway training programs. So it's Chris's job to make sure everybody who joins one of these training programs gets exactly what they're expecting and what they've been advertised. So I wanted to talk to him for a while and get the lowdown from his perspective. The second part of today's episode, as I mentioned in episode 4A, is Jeff, during his kickoff meeting here in Cincinnati at the Cincinnati version of the Galloway training programs. You'll hear Jeff talk about the program, answer a lot of questions. And what I hope you can actually hear, besides the amazing wisdom in this episode, is the enthusiasm that was filled in that room. That may or may not come through in the recording, but I was there, and take my word for it, these people were pumped up. So let's get to the good stuff. Please make sure you head over to the website, www.thegallowayextramile.com, for the show notes, where I will put a link to Jeff's website that shows all the cities where the training programs are available, as well as our comment line and our email address. Feel free to send us any comments or questions about the training programs as well. And until the next episode, y'all enjoy your extra mile.
All right, let's head over to the Extra Mile Podcast Galloway Edition Hotline, where we've got on the line with us Mr. Chris Twiggs. How you doing this morning, Chris?
Oh, golly, I am just enjoying myself to no end, Kevin.
You're in Florida.
I am.
Whereabouts?
In Florida. I'm in northeast Florida, as far northeast as you can go, on Amelia Island, and it's sunny, and just went for a run on the beach, and I'm having a great time.
So you had a special guest on your run this morning?
I did. Jeff Galloway has been making his tour through Florida this week, and it included a stop at the Mayo Clinic yesterday where he gave a talk. And so he's been staying here with us, and we went for a run this morning on some trails and then headed over to the beach and covered about 8 miles and had a great time.
Nice. The Mayo Clinic. Now, that's I know that is closely associated with a marathon that's near and dear to your heart. True?
It really is. 26.2 with Donna. I am on the board for that race and one of the folks that helped get that thing started. It's, of course, near and dear to Jeff's heart as well. And so he and Donna Deegan, the Donna of 26.2 with Donna, were two speakers to a group of folks that have been kind enough to leave a great deal of money to the Mayo Clinic in their wills, and so they were there thanking them and talking to them about the good work that those folks at Mayo are doing.
Well, maybe we'll talk again in a few weeks, because I've begged Donna to come on the show as well to talk a lot about that marathon and specifically how it relates to the Galloway training programs and the special association that the training programs and Donna or and Jeff has with that marathon as well.
Well, great. Donna loves to talk about nothing more than that, and so I'm sure you won't have any trouble getting her to say something for you.
Yeah. Well, let's back up a little bit. Why are you on my telephone? What's your job?
Program director for Galloway Training Programs. And so my job is to help facilitate the programs in about 90 different cities around the country and a few in other countries that have popped up. And then I also spend a lot of time fielding emails and calls from people who are interested in starting new Galloway training programs in different areas.
Well, that sounds like an exciting job. Tell us, before we get into the specifics of that, tell us a little bit about your background. How long, as far as it relates to running? I know you did 8.5 today, so you're obviously a pretty decent runner. How long have you been running?
I ran my very first marathon at the Walt Disney World Marathon in 1994, and that was, I didn't consider myself a runner before I did that. Certainly, you don't have to run a marathon to be considered a runner, but I truly did not run until my wife came to me about 6 months before that marathon and said, Disney's going to have a new marathon, and I think this is something we should do together. And she had run as early as junior high school and convinced me to do it. And so I tell people I started running for the noblest of reasons, to get to know a woman.
You and me both, Chris. You and me both.
Exactly. So I started running in 94, and I'm, along with Jeff Galloway, I'm one of about 100 folks that have been fortunate enough to do the Disney Marathon every single year for the last 18 years, and started doing run-walk on my second marathon when we met Jeff, and he was telling people at the pre-race talk about how to use his method. And so I started using Run Walk for the Disney Marathon in January of 1995 and have used that for about 50 marathons since then.
You and I met, and I had the pleasure of running with you in Atlanta back in January, and you were telling me a pretty awesome story about one of your very recent marathons. You BQ'd. True?
Yes, I did.
And you BQ'd using Run, Walk, Run.
I did. I absolutely did. I ran for 4 minutes and walked for 20 seconds from the very beginning of the marathon, and I had a personal best of 3:09, which qualified me for Boston. It actually gave me about an 11-minute buffer on my Boston qualifying time, and it was awesome. It was a great experience. And I have no doubt that I wouldn't have been able to go that fast had I not taken those walk breaks. And it was terrific. And so I don't have much sympathy. Every once in a while I have people who tell me, oh, well, I would do Galloway, but I like to go fast. And I tell them, well, I ran at 3:09. Now, if you're planning on going faster than 2:28 is the fastest we know of for someone who took walk breaks consistently every mile. So if you want to run faster than 2:28, if you're planning on running in the Olympic marathon, then maybe there's a chance you don't need the run walk. But if you talk to Jeff, he'll tell you even those people that are running that fast could benefit from his method.
What marathon did you BQ at? Where was that?
It was at Disney. I really have come to see that as my home course from a standpoint of knowing it, having run it 18 times. I feel like I could run it in my sleep. In fact, I'd love to try that sometime. And so I push pretty hard in that. Of course, I've run 26.2 with Donna every year, but I have a different responsibility for that race. I coordinate the pacers for that race. It's the only race in the country that uses Galloway pacers for all of the pace groups. And so I have the responsibility of recruiting and setting up the pacers that are going to lead the pace groups at that. And then I led the 330 pace group at that race this past year. So I can't run my fastest times if I'm going to be leading a group and making sure that I'm not hurting myself too much.
Well, I think everybody who's listening right now and uses Run, Walk, Run, that marathon in particular has got to be on our bucket list, and it's certainly on mine.
We really want it to be a homecoming for people that use Jeff's methods. We had a meeting yesterday before Jeff and Donna spoke to Mayo. The three of us sat down with Amanda Napolitano, who's the executive director of the marathon, and we were talking about things. This will be the fifth year for 26.2 with Donna, and we really want to find some ways to make that special for everyone. So we talked about some ideas for thanking the streakers, the people that will have run it all 5 years, but then also doing some special things for Galloway folks, whether they're members of Galloway training programs or if they're folks that are Jeff's e-coach clients, mm-hmm. or people who have been listening to the Galloway Extra Mile podcast and training that way. We really want to make this marathon feel like a homecoming for Galloway folks. When you do it, when you use Run Walk, and I know you've used it in other marathons,
mm-hmm.
you sometimes get people that look at you a little bit funny when you're off to the side taking those walk breaks. And, of course, at our marathon in Jacksonville Beach, the vast majority of people are taking Run Walk. The pace groups are doing Run Walk, and so there's no one looking at you funny. And that doesn't necessarily mean you're going any slower either. As you
exactly
out, qualified, we have a lot of people that qualify for Boston using Run Walk. And in fact, the year isn't over yet for 2011, but in 2010, 26.2 with Donna was actually the fastest marathon in Florida. So.
Nice.
And there are a lot of marathons in Florida, but ours had the fastest times.
Well, it's interesting you said that people look at you funny sometimes when you use it. And when I used it in my marathon, I kind of expected that, but I wasn't surprised. They really didn't get that many looks, so that didn't hit me. What surprised me was the number of people using, not just using the Galloway Run, Walk, Run, but specifically using the interval timers, because every time one would go off, I'd look down and see if it was mine or feel for the vibration on it. And they're all over the place.
Well, the vibrating option on that is probably its best selling point for me.
Yeah.
I clip mine onto the band of my watch, and that way I don't have to worry about all the beeps that I hear around. I can just, when I feel it vibrating, I know that's when I walk. And when it vibrates again, I know that's when I run. And I was out there in front of the 310 pace group at Disney, and I kind of thought up there I really would get a lot of people looking at me funny and maybe making some comments, and not many people did. And in fact, at about 10 miles, this guy came up to me and he said, "I noticed what you're doing, and do you mind if I try it?" Of course not. I'd love to have him there. And I did warn him, though, because he hadn't taken the walk breaks from the beginning. I warned him that it's going to be a little bit tougher for him to hang in there, but he was absolutely welcome to stay with me. And at one point, at about 18 or 19 miles, I could tell he was starting to fade a little bit. So I actually took off my timer and gave it to him and told him that he should hold on to it and keep using it, and I could just kind of follow on my watch.
Right.
Are you sure? I told him. I assured him I knew where I could get another one.
Well, listen, we spoke a little bit about your background, your bio, and also your history with Run, Walk, Run. Tell us a little bit about how you got involved specifically in the Galloway training programs.
Well, after meeting Jeff in January of '95, prior to that Disney marathon, we had wonderful success with that marathon, by the way. The very first time we took walk breaks, I improved my time by 15 minutes. I went from a 4:15 to 4 hours, which I was very happy with at the time. My wife improved her time in the marathon from a 4:14, she beat me by 1 minute that first marathon, to a 3:38.
Wow.
And so she qualified for Boston in just her second marathon and her first time using Run Walk. So we were very excited about it. We wanted to tell Jeff, as a lot of people do when you have great success using the system, you want to tell Jeff all about it. So we saw him at the Marine Corps Marathon later in 95 and went up and talked to him at the expo. And he had a new book that had just come out. And so I read through it, and it had a little comment in the back that it was sort of a work in progress, and he welcomed people to give him feedback and ideas for changing or improving that book.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working as an English professor, and asked him, are you serious? You'd really like to have some assistance? And he said, yes. So I worked with him, and we had a couple of projects that we talked about and threw around with book ideas. And but then what ended up happening is he suggested that, you know, while you're doing this other stuff, why don't you start a Galloway training program? And so I was moving to Greenville, South Carolina at that time, and so I thought that'd be a good way to get to know my new neighbor to
sure.
start a program. So I started a Galloway training program in Greenville, and then a while later we ended up moving to Ormond Beach, Florida, and so I started a Galloway program in Daytona Beach. Then we moved up close to Jacksonville, and I started a Galloway program in Jacksonville, and so I finally said, that's it. I'm not going to start any more Galloway training programs, and now that's kind of my full-time job.
Yeah, be careful what you ask for.
Exactly. So, but that's the short version of my long history with Jeff over the years, and it's been a wonderful, wonderful time, and even when I was continuing to teach my English classes, I knew that my passion was in helping people achieve their goals through running and walking.
That is so inspiring. We Jeff and I spoke about a week and a half ago for episode 4A of the podcast, and we touched on the Galloway training programs. But I was very interested in speaking with you from a kind of a different angle. So if you could give me an idea of, from your perspective, what is so great about these training programs, and who, I mean, what's different about them? What's so great about them that's different from any other kind of program that our listeners could maybe, you know, look to join other spots of the country? And more specifically, what's the target audience? Who do you see usually? What kinds of people do you see get into these things?
Sure. Well, the target audience, We like to see all sorts of people. The reality in most of our programs is that we have a lot more women than we do men, and which I kind of always thought that when word got out that we had a lot more women, suddenly a whole bunch more men would show up. After all, that's what got me.
Makes sense.
But we do tend to have a lot more women. I think women maybe are a little more social than men, and it really is a fun social group that gets together for group runs. We have all abilities, and the great thing about Jeff's Magic Mile formula, and I know you guys have talked about that, is that it allows us to put people into different pace groups according to their Magic Mile. And in a large program, the Jacksonville program, for example, has about 600 runners in it, and we have enough pace group leaders that we can divide people up every 30 seconds according to their Magic Mile. So if you run your Magic Mile in 8 minutes and someone else runs the Magic Mile in 8.5 minutes, we have separate pace groups for those folks. Now, in the smaller Galloway programs, they may not have as many pace groups, but as much as possible, we divide folks into pace groups according to their Magic Mile time, and that means they're able to run the group runs with a bunch of folks who are comfortable running at the same pace. And this means no one's having to run faster ever than they should, and no one's having to run significantly slower, although we're all going to be running about 2 minutes per mile slower than what we could be running on a given day, just because that's the safest way to do those long runs. And the biggest difference that I see between these programs and some of the others that I hear about, sometimes I hear people say, well, I show up for a group run with such and such a group, and we're given a map, and we're told where to go, and they say, well, we'll see you when you get back, and you're just kind of on your own. Or maybe you start as one big group, and then people slowly peter out, and our groups are not that way at all. You have pace group leaders that run with the group the entire time, and if someone in that group is struggling, then everyone in that group slows down to bring that person in. We don't leave anybody out there. I love the people that I run with, and I have driven through the night to get back to my program on my Saturday for my Saturday morning runs, just because I wanted to find out how a particular guy's weekend went, or how somebody's story turns out.
Right.
Tell stories. We just really my best friends are folks that I run with. I think there's something about the act of sharing a long run with someone that helps you open up and helps you grow closer to each other. I know that Jeff would say it has to do with the way the endorphins kick in and the left brain and the right brain,
right,
and all that stuff. But I think it's just about having fun and being comfortable around folks. And that's what the Galloway program offers. It offers that camaraderie, but then also, of course, the structure and the professionalism of those group leaders who know what they're doing and will make sure you're not going too fast, that you're taking the walk breaks on time and all of that.
Right. And, I've often thought that it also would appeal to somebody who wants to run a marathon, believes in this program, but needs that extra push. In other words, that group of people you're going to show up with become your friends. And if you don't show 1 week, it's like putting yourself out there. I'm doing it. I'm showing up. If you don't show, I imagine somebody's going to call you to the carpet on it.
We all need accountability. We really do. And if you don't show up for that Saturday run, it might not be the next Saturday before you see those people, because you may bump into them in the grocery store, or you might see them at church the next day, or you might see them when your kids are playing soccer together, and they're going to ask you, why weren't you there? Why did you miss that run? So it really is an opportunity to hold each other accountable. If all I'm doing is training on my own, and I did that back before I had my own Galloway program to go and run with, if I was running on my own, there were times I was really tempted, and there were times I succumbed to the temptation to skip a run or to cut a run short, and sometimes those were long runs. And I had some bad marathons that were the result of cutting some long runs short when I just didn't feel it. But when I've got that group there that I know is waiting for me and is counting on me, it's very hard for me to skip the run. And then, of course, that was especially true when I was a local program director and I had to be the guy out there putting water out.
Yeah, exactly.
Not going to skip then.
Okay, Chris, I understand the whole commitment thing. You're right. Any other kind of runner you guys typically see?
There is. The other type of runner that we see is that person who is looking for the next level, the next thing, that they've been frustrated either by injuries or just haven't been able to get the time goals that they wanted, and they come because they know they need help to get there. There are some local runners that I've worked with who are fast runners at shorter distances, but either succumb to injury when they try to train for half marathons or marathons, or they keep falling off of their training. And so the group is able to help them with that, and using the information in Jeff's book and as it's reinforced in the program, they're able to get through the whole training season without injury. And a lot of those end up being our Boston qualifiers, the folks that just needed that extra push and to do it the right way. I like to refer to the Galloway training program as the most humane way to train for a marathon or a half marathon. And that is because you're not as likely to get injured when you're using Jeff's method.
How long are the training programs? You obviously sign up online for a specific city and a specific program, but how long do these last?
Well, of course, it depends on what people are training for. We have some training programs in some cities that focus on 5Ks or 10Ks. Those tend to be 8 to 12-week programs. We have other programs that focus on half marathons, and those typically are 16 to 20 weeks. And then the longer programs, which are usually our marathon training programs, are in the 28 to 32-week range. And then some cities just train year-round, and they hit multiple races throughout the year, and just they get so addicted, I think, to the social aspect of the training group that they never want to take a break from each other. So, but what you're typically looking at is about 6 to 8 months of training.
And you mentioned at the beginning, but how many cities do we have going right now?
About 90 different cities. Literally every day I get emails and phone calls from people that are interested in starting programs. And so we have right now probably about 10 different cities that are in development on different stages of getting their own programs. And then, of course, at any given time, some cities might be in season while other cities in different parts of the country are not in season. The reason Jeff is down here in Florida this week is a lot of the Florida programs are just getting ready to kick off and train for the Florida marathons. Of course, if you're going to run a marathon in Florida, it really needs to be in the winter. You're not going to find a July or an August marathon.
Wonder why that is.
Yeah, exactly. So we have a lot of programs that are getting ready to start. We have had a Jacksonville kickoff on Wednesday, just going down to St. Augustine tonight. He'll do Daytona tomorrow, and then he'll do Tampa and Lakeland and Orlando and Sarasota over the next few days.
So I'm convinced I want to join one of these. Where do I get details on whether there's a program in my town, and if so, how much, how to sign up, and all that good stuff?
Well, of course, all good things are at jeffgalloway.com. You can go there and pull up the list of cities where we have training programs. From that list, you can click on a link to register for a particular program, or you can click on a link if you just want to email the local program director to find out more about what that program has to offer or where they meet, that sort of thing. One great benefit of being in a Galloway training program is that once you've joined, if you're in season in your local program, you are considered a member of all of the programs around the country and around the world. And so if you're traveling on business and it takes you to Cincinnati, for example, then all you have to do is call up or email the program director in Cincinnati and say, hey, I'm going to be up there for business or for a vacation. Can you tell me where you guys are meeting? And you show up and you can run with a pace group that's running your pace and is helping you along the way. And you've got that consistency from city to city, whether you're in Los Angeles or Las Vegas or Atlanta I don't want to go through and name all the cities, but
sure, yeah,
that's the idea. And it's a wonderful thing to do. You feel like you're running with a whole bunch of new friends when you show up and run with the Galloway program in a new city.
That's great. And lastly, so I look online, I go to jeffgalloway.com, I click on the right links and get to the training programs, and there's not one in my city. Is there information on how to maybe get one going?
Oh, there sure is. There's a frequently asked questions page on there that kind of gives you some information about what you're in for if you decide to start a program. And then there's also information there about how to get in touch with me so that you can call me up or send me an email. Or if any of your listeners are interested, they can just email Chris, C-H-R-I-S, at jeffgalloway.com and let me know. There's not a Galloway program where I live, but I'd be interested in getting one going. And I'll work with them. It usually takes a month or two of training and figuring out exactly what the right target race is and that sort of thing. And then, of course, factor in to that time, there's advertising. We want to let people know about the program to get one going. But we have them starting all the time. And if there's not one close to where you are and you want one, then by golly, I want you to have one.
That is great. I appreciate your time this morning, Chris. I'll put the link to the training programs off of jeffgalloway.com in the show notes. So if anybody's listening and happen to be out on the run today, get back, listen to it again, or head over to the webpage, and I'll have all that ready for you. Appreciate your time this morning, Chris. You and Jeff have some more plans for the day, or?
I think our plans involve going to a nice place for lunch where we can sit out on the patio and enjoy the sunshine and the cool breeze.
I'm going to stop asking now. I get jealous.
You know, there are houses for sale in Florida. Come on now. But we're gonna do that, and then we're making some plans for some of the new programs. And while he's making his way through Florida right now. I'm also planning his sweep through Texas next month. So we've got to get all the kickoffs and meet and greets lined up for that state next month.
Great. Well, listen, you and I hopefully will touch base again in a few weeks if you'll give me some more time when we get a lot more specific about the 26.2 with Donna Marathon down there in Jacksonville, which I think, what is it, like maybe the 13th of February next year?
It's the 12th.
12th, okay.
I believe it's the 12th of February. Now you've got me jumping back and
that's okay.
Just to make sure. But
it's somewhere in mid-February.
Yes, it is. 12, I believe, is when it is.
Good. You and I will talk again. I'd love to get your perspective from the director's end of that or from the on the board of that marathon and some particulars about that, if you don't mind chatting again later.
Absolutely. I look forward to it, Kevin, and thank you for giving me some of your time today.
No problem. You guys have a great day, and tell Jeff we said hello, and to be safe on all those travels he's got coming up.
I will.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, so we're going to get started. I'm going to talk about the Galloway program here in Cincinnati after Jeff gets finished, because I know you want to hear him talking, not so much about hearing me talk. So we will follow up with any Galloway, Cincinnati Galloway program questions, and I'll give you a little bit of information about it after we hear from Jeff. And without further ado, I would like to introduce Jeff Galloway.
Thank you, Suzelle. I also want to thank the great folks here at Fleet Feet. I visit a lot of running stores throughout my travels, probably about 60 to 70 stores that claim that they are technical running stores, and less than half of them really are. This is one of the very best that you're going to find because the people are trained and they really are your advocates. They want to match you up with the shoe. Something I learned since 1973 when I started my own store. They care about it. Secondly, I want to give credit where credit is due with the Galloway program and here in Cincinnati area, Suzelle and her staff. And let's give them a really big hand. The group leaders also care a lot about you. They don't want you to puke. And that's a good thing. Also want to teach you what the program is all about. What I'm here to do tonight is to demystify a lot of these myths that people get about running. One of the most interesting things about running is that it empowers us to do a number of things. And one of the things that we're empowered to do is to give advice. And sadly, a lot of the advice that comes across from one runner to another is absolutely terrible advice. It's based on something that worked for one person, but it doesn't work for the other 50 million people in the U.S. who run. So what I'm going to try to do is sort through the more than 300,000 people that I have heard back from individually who've tried various things, and then I gave them advice on how to solve their problem, and then told me how it works. So what we're going to talk about is some proven methods, and if you have any questions at all, you can ask right on the spot. If you do not understand my Atlanta accent, then Suzelle can translate. Another key player in my world these days is Kevin Gwynn. Kevin is right over here. He is the producer of the Galloway Extra Mile podcast, which is a fabulous deal in learning. And a lot of people will download it, and then they will play it while they're running. So they're getting technical help while they're going through their run, and they're being entertained at the same time. So what we're going to do tonight is actually record stuff that can be used on the podcast. So anyway, what I'm going to do first is get into a number of the components that I've found productive in training and have allowed people to achieve their goals. The way that my own evolution in running occurred is that during the first 20 years, I tried to pile everything on that I heard might work. And I made a whole lot of mistakes and got injured on the average about every 3 weeks. However, as I proceeded past the 20-year mark in my running, I decided to eliminate the things that were sort of extra baggage. And what I've come up with is a very simple plan. It involves the need to only run 3 days a week. Now, if you want to run more than that, that's fine. But you only need to run 3 days a week. And I've actually known quite a few people who've trained for marathons, even sub-3-hour marathons, by running 3 days a week. The so-called world record for someone running 3 days a week is 2 hours and 14 minutes. So it is possible, in my opinion, to achieve everything in 3 days a week that you could achieve on more days a week than that. Absolute essence of training is to have one longer one that's done on a regular interval of progression, gradually increasing up to at least the distance that you're going to be running in your race. The other two runs during the week are minimal runs of 30 minutes each. These are maintenance runs. And so you only need to sort of drag yourself through those things, walking or running. The long run is the key to the whole program, because endurance is what long distance running is all about, and you produce endurance through the long run. The concept, though, of speed is that it doesn't matter how fast you run. You're going to get exactly the same endurance whether you run super fast or whether you run super slow. If you run super slow and take a whole lot of walk breaks, then you're going to recover super fast. You also will avoid a few things that I don't like. I am against puking. I told you that. I am against death. And I know that that's a losing battle, but I'm still against death. And there are a number of people every year that have serious problems because they keep pushing themselves when they get super tired in marathons or long runs. It doesn't have to happen. The first major element of our program that can hold you back and keep you within your limitations is what I call the magic mile. It's a 1 mile time trial that we do in our training program with all of our groups, our pace groups. It actually allows us to sort you into an appropriate pace group so that the greyhounds are running with the greyhounds, the snails are running with the snails, and the other creatures are running with their own kind. But the key here is that you really need to go at an appropriate pace, and unfortunately, I hear every day from at least 20 people that had no clue what the appropriate pace was on long runs. The Magic Mile will tell you that. Here's how it works. I've had more than 30,000 people now go through the process of running a series of magic miles, coming up with their fastest one, and then comparing it with what they ran per mile in their goal pace at the end of the season. So what I've done is crunched the numbers on this to see how much you slow down when you go from a fast 1 mile to a fast per mile pace in these other events. I found that there's a 30% slowdown in the marathon, a 20% slowdown in the half marathon, 15% slowdown in the 10K, and a 33-second per mile slowdown in the 5K. Now, each one of these percentages or seconds is really based on someone who has done all of the speed training and all the endurance training to prepare for that time goal. And they had ideal conditions on race day, which often do not occur, but at least you would know what the potential would be by using the Magic Mile time trial. So let's say that you went through the training program with us and your very fastest Magic Mile time was 10 minutes flat. That predicts an all-out marathon of 13 minutes per mile. 30% slowdown from 10 relates to a 13-minute per mile all-out marathon pace. Again, that assumes that you did all of the speed work, and I'll talk about that in a few minutes, and that you had ideal conditions. Now, one of the major ideal conditions is temperature. And I've studied this because most of the 300,000 plus people I've worked with have resided in the southern portion of the United States. We know about heat, and we know how much it can slow you down. So I've done some studies on this and found that it tends to slow you down 30 seconds a mile for every 5 degrees above 60. And if you will crank those numbers in as the temperature rises, which we do for you in our PACE groups, then you don't have to get overextended and you don't have to go into the penalty box at the end of long runs. That's the hospital. And knock on wood, we have not had a single serious case in all of our 300,000 plus people that have gone through our programs over the years. And it's because of the slowdown that we do and the more frequent run-walk-run ratio as a result of that. So now we've come to the run-walk-run portion, which is a totally unique part of our program. We started using this in 1973. In 76, we actually had a series of 15 marathon training programs all over the United States, and that has grown now to about 90 Galloway programs. One of the benefits is that if you're on vacation, you can, if you're in a city where we have a program, you can run with them. You're joining a club, and you can transpose your membership whatever location our clubs are located in. But the run, walk, run is based on the fact that the longer you run continuously, the more detrimental it is to your muscles, tendons, weak links. The sooner you take a walk break, the sooner you erase the fatigue so that you can keep on going at the end. So you have to ask yourself, do I want to be strong in the first 3 to 6 miles or during the last 3 to 6 miles? Well, last time I checked, it's better to be strong in the last 3 to 6 miles because you want to look good for the photos, you know. But seriously, the times that are turned in by using run, walk, run, by those who used to run more continuously, averaging out to more than 13 minutes faster with run, walk, run. Why? Because you don't slow down at the end. The run, walk, run keeps those muscles resilient, keeps them strong. It means that you're the one that's passing people at the end. You're the one that's able to celebrate that evening instead of hit the couch or the bed all afternoon and be in hibernation from humanity. It means that you can run the next day or two in a lot of cases. You don't have to take that next week off. And you don't have to walk backwards down the stairs. There are so many benefits to run, walk, run, and they keep unfolding week after week as my 100-plus emails come in to me. People that have no idea that they could get off the couch and 6 months later finish a marathon, transform their lives in a positive direction, and be able to take others that were relatives and friends along that same path, empowering their lives and changing them for the better. It is a fact that the empowerment we receive from crossing the finish line in one of these events has not been shown to be greater in any other event that humans can do. So we have a whole lot of wonderful things ahead of us, so I don't want you to puke, and that's why I've set up these rules. I want to pause right now to see if there are any questions about anything that I have said before. Or anything that needs translating. Yes.
I have a question. This is a detail about your magic mile. If you're going to run walk, but you don't run walk that magic, do you have to run walk that magic mile? I mean, I can run a mile, so I usually run a mile, but it doesn't translate then to the same.
Yeah. The question for those of you in the back is, if you are used to running a mile nonstop, do you have to put walk breaks into the magic mile? And the answer is no, you can do it either way. I will say, though, that I've heard from probably about 5,000 or 6,000 people now who have done it both ways. They've run some of their magic miles nonstop and then some of them with some form of a walk break. And in most cases, about 60%, the faster times come from some form of a walk break. But it's totally up to you. Most commonly, people either take a short walk at the halfway point or at each quarter mile.
Okay.
Yes.
Jeff, you said on the heat, you know, slows you down. What about humidity?
It's built into it. The question is about heat slowing you down, and the question was about what about humidity? The answer to that is that the slowdown of 30 seconds a mile for every 5 degrees above 60 has humidity built into it. If I were out in Arizona, the slowdown is about 20 seconds for every 5 degrees above 60, but I don't even tell them that because they're safer by slowing down more. So this is a little secret that we're not going to divulge to the people in Arizona. Questions? Any questions so far? Okay, a couple of other things that enter in here. How many of you have run these events that you're training for this year, but would like to run a little faster this year? Yeah, we started out with just a few hands, and then as people looked around and saw other hands, we have about 85 to 90% of the field here is interested in running a little faster. Well, first of all, you may be surprised at this, but a lot of people, a growing trend in the run, walk, run is that a lot of folks are finding that they're running faster with more frequent walk breaks. Give you an example. Our boilerplate ratios that we use are for a 9 minute per mile pace, run 4 minutes and walk one. For 10 minutes per mile, 3 and 1. 11 minutes per mile, 2.5 and 1. 12 minutes per mile, 2 and 1. 13 minutes per mile, 1 and 1. 14 minutes per mile, 30 seconds and 30 seconds. 15 minutes per mile, 20 seconds running, 40 seconds walking. And then it goes up from there, more walking than running. Surprisingly, there are a whole lot of people for various reasons that are slowing down at the end with a given ratio. And I will drop them down to a lot more walking and they end up running 5 to 10 minutes faster in their race. A lot of this is individual, but I will say that if you are finding that you're slowing down at the end, you may want to do what Barbara, my wife Barbara and I have done. We started out about 5 years ago running 3 minutes and walking 1 minute in our marathons. We were running in the Disney Marathon about 3 years ago, and Barbara was starting to slow down during that second half of that, during the last minute of the 3 minutes. So I said, let's try 1 and 1. And to give you a little tidbit as to what actually did happen, there was a woman that went by us that had Galloway Girl written on her calf muscle. And Barbara really wanted to catch up with her, but she could not do it with 3 and 1. We were losing ground. Well, when we went to 1 and 1, we caught up with her. And so what happens is there's a resiliency, a greater resiliency that occurs if you're walking more frequently. And I'm not going to tell you to drop down based on just what Barbara and I did. I've heard from at least 10,000 people who've done exactly the same thing, speeded up their times. Folks that were doing 2 and 1 but went down to 1 and 1. Folks that were doing 2 and 1 that went down to 30 seconds, 30 seconds. It's really amazing, and it's really blown my mind as to how fast some people are running. One of my e-coach clients was running 3 and 1 2 years ago when she came on board my service of e-coaching. She was running 5:15, that's as fast as she could run, and she was cramping up badly in the last 6 miles. So I said, you need to try 1 and 1. In her next marathon, she used 1 and 1 all the way through and improved 13 minutes off her PR. Took 13 minutes, 30 seconds a mile, just like that. But she still cramped up in the last 2 miles. So I had her drop down to 30:30. She has continued to improve now down to 4:38 in using a 30:30. I was experimenting with that 2 weeks ago. I was running a half marathon in Murray, Kentucky, and I had just run a marathon the week before and was a little bit tuckered out from that marathon. So I decided that I would just do 30-30 in the half marathon and just cruise through it. Well, it was a cool day, and for whatever reason, I was feeling really good. So I decided to use 30-30 and just see how fast I could run. The results? 9 minutes and 38 seconds per mile average for a half marathon using 30-30. You know, some of these shorter amounts are not going to slow you down like you think. As a matter of fact, they usually speed you up. And I just want you to have an open mind about these things, because if you're getting tuckered out from having a longer amount of running, there is a fix for that. The whole principle here in walk breaks is that you are the captain of your ship. And if you're starting to feel some symptoms such as fatigue, aches and pains, you can usually either do away with them or manage them if you will have frequent enough walk breaks built in. For beginners, by the way, we reverse the ratios. We start out with 5 to 10 seconds of running and the rest of the minute walking. And almost everybody just embraces this and feels great doing that and want to do more. I'll tell you the story of one of those. There was a woman who came to one of my retreats about 4 years ago now with her daughter, who's 18 years old. The woman had been running for about 15 years. The daughter was just beginning to run. The story was that the daughter had been born without two vertebrae and without the ribs to support the vertebra there. And when she was a baby, first 6 months, they did not think she was going to live because the insides were all jumbled up. And when the breathing and everything was going downhill, heart function, doctors decided that they would try to intervene with no guarantees at all of sustaining this gal's life. And they were successful. They hit the jackpot on that. She was bedridden for about 6 years, but she was alive and she was starting to get better and have fewer of the breathing issues and so forth. At age 6, as she started to grow, the doctor saw some potential in her being able to be mobile, not really walking, but maybe with a walker because she was really bedridden. So they did another series of operations along her spine and supported it. And sure enough, within about a year and a half, she was able to actually get up in a walker. And she was able to sort of move through. This gal is something else. She just had a whole powerhouse inside of her. She wasn't going to accept no for an answer. So she goes through the walker, and then she actually starts walking, contrary to what all of the doctors thought. Well, she walked more, and by the age of 18, she just had this curiosity, could she run? And the mother knew about my method, so she brought her down there, and we tried while she was down there some 10-second walking and 10-second running, 50-second walking, and she said, you know, this is great. I can do this. I can do this. And she was wobbling, yes. She had some wobbles, but she was really thriving with the empowerment of doing that. The mother did not get back to me, nor the daughter, until last December. And she gave me an update. She said that Glenn, is the daughter's name, had really enjoyed her running. So she entered a 5K about 6 months after she had come to the camp. And then she entered a 10K about 6 months after that. And wanted to enter a half marathon, and the mother shook her head and said, I don't know that you can do this, but she was able to use her run, walk, run in the right way for her. She finished a half marathon a year later. A year after that, she finished a marathon. She has now done 8 marathons, and last year she qualified for Boston. The sad part about this is that she zooms home from work on the day when you have to qualify, and it was too late. It was all closed. So the other thing that the mother said was, you know, I was thinking that if there was anybody that could maybe help Glenn get in. Oh my gosh. Anyway, the bottom line is that I did have a good friend who just retired as the executive director of the Boss BAA. I got in touch with him, and he's a great guy, and he said, I'll see what I can do. And sure enough, he was able to convince the powers that be that she should be in the marathon. She finished with extra strength, and it was just the best day of her life. It was such the email was just an amazing email. What we're doing here is more than just running and getting medals. We're empowering ourselves and we're empowering other people. The studies show that every person who enters a half or full marathon influences at least 20 other people to positively change their health behaviors in some way or another. So you're really out there and people are watching you, so don't blow it. But the primary thing that I want to emphasize is that you need to keep the fun in there. Because if you're not having fun, the people that are looking at you will notice that too. But even more important, you're more likely to burn out. And you never have to burn out. So by adjusting the run, walk, run on a given day, you will be able to be in control over this process. And you can add more walking on the days you need to. And then you can run farther on the cool days that feel really good. One other item that I wanted to cover, and then I want to open it up to any questions you have. I just came out with a new book called Mental Training for Runners, The Key to Motivation. The point of this book was that I was given this assignment for the book a little over a year ago. And I had a number of techniques that you will see in some of my other books about how people have stayed motivated and how they've been able to overcome barriers in races and go on to qualify and so forth. But I didn't have a clue as to why these methods worked. So before I started writing the book, I thought I'd try to find out why they were working so well. My wife Barbara had been doing some reading in this area for a little over 10 years. And she would quote some of these paragraphs to me, you know, when we're driving places or on a plane. And I would say, oh yeah, that sounds good, you know. But it didn't seem to apply in my other works until I started doing the research on motivation. And there were three key authors out of several others that she recommended to me that really made an impact on me. The first is a guy named John Sarno, who has written two major books. One is Healing Back Pain, and the other one is The Mind-Body Prescription. Now, his whole thesis in these books, based on medical research and practice, is called tension myositis syndrome. When the it boils down to the way the brain, our brain structure, is oriented. We have two major components. The reflex brain, which is the subconscious part of us that we inhabited from our animal ancestors, it is subconscious. And it's amazing. It keeps the heart running, the lungs going, the blood flow where it needs to go. It monitors stress. It tries to take care of things. And all this is done subconsciously so that we don't have to take action. It does it for us. It's been doing it for millions of years in our ancestors. It also monitors stress. And when the stress level gets so that the reflex brain considers it to be too much, it will do several negative things. Sarno has it well documented that one of the things it does about increasing pain is that it will actually constrict blood flow to known sites of damage. And the damage that's in there is not enough to cause the level of pain that actually comes about. But once you're under stress, that reflex brain doesn't want you to add more stress, so it subconsciously restricts the blood flow. And the darn place hurts, and then it hurts more. Now, Sarno, once he started implementing his method, he now has an over 93% cure rate. The significance here is that he deals with the hardcore cases, the people that have had debilitating back pain for 10 to 20 years. And what he says is, you do not have to do away with the stress. All you have to do is acknowledge that the stress is what is causing the shutdown of blood flow. And then you have to move the consciousness into your conscious brain so that the conscious brain, the human brain, the frontal lobe, can then take control over the reflex brain and start positive action. The other major thing that I learned from reading two other authors, one Bruce Lipton and one Candace Pert, is that we have a whole network of communication inside of us that is separate from the central nervous system. It is a series of receptor molecules on billions of cells throughout the body. And our body is constantly producing hormones all day long. The hormones give messages that are sent back to the reflex brain as to how we're doing and whether we're under stress and then what the reflex brain should do about that. If we have a high level of stress, then the reflex brain triggers the secretion of anxiety hormones and then negative hormones. And the more stress we're under, the more negative hormones we're going to tend to get. One of the hormones that's very well documented is called cortisol. And it's designed to keep you going when you don't have many other resources left. And the reflex brain shuts down blood flow to the gut, shuts down blood flow to the immune system, and it increases the cortisol, which will keep you going. But cortisol is very well known to be a depressive type drug that the body produces. It causes you to feel down, down, down for days and days afterwards. It takes quite a while to get it totally out of your system. The point is that if you can take action as the stress is building up, you're in control over this process. What I have outlined based on the practice that I've then been using is to break up what is your challenge into a series of steps. If you try to take the whole chunk at one time, you're very unlikely to do away with the stress. But instead of saying, I've got 20 more miles to go in this marathon and I feel awful, if you say, I've got 30 more seconds to run, I know I can do it, then instead of producing negative hormones, you're producing positive hormones. One of the most positive hormones that our body produces are the group that's known of as the beta endorphins, and running causes the greatest production of these as opposed to any other activity we can do. So anyway, what questions do you have about anything? I'd really like to get into what you are interested here. Yes?
I just wanted to be clear. Can you take your example back with the magic mile of 10 minutes a mile and percentage slowdown depending on the length of the race? So let's talk marathon again. So magic mile, 10 minutes a mile. Marathon pace, 13 minutes a mile. Can you say the 13 minutes a mile? Do you mean just the running portion or the average overall pace once you've thrown walk breaks in?
The question is, when I mention a pace per mile, does that mean that the pace, I'm talking about the pace when we're running or the overall pace? It's the overall pace. And the problem with the pace when running is it varies constantly, because what we found in our Galloway groups is that during the walk break is where people spread out, because some people like to walk really fast and some people like to sort of mosey along. And it's fine. The point of the walk break is to recover from the run. So you want to go as slow as you need to, but some people can recover with a fast walk and a short stride. The key is to keep the stride short. Long stride can cause problems. So pace per mile is what we're talking about. In other words, at the end of that mile, what's on the watch? Very simple. Yes?
What do you say when I tell people I do a run walk, and I think a lot of runners think that walking isn't really running. And so what's a good elevator speech for I do a run walk and people go, oh, right, because they think I can't, that I'm not really a runner. So, what's a good elevator speech for that?
The question is, how do you deal with people who say, when you're talking about taking walk breaks, that you're not a real runner if you take walk breaks? One of the first things that I say is, well, gosh, I've been running for 52 years, and I didn't know there was a rule book. As a matter of fact, from the time that I started running 52 years ago, running's always been a free-form activity that anybody can choose to do it at what pace, and whether they walk or not, never has been an issue. Now, tell me where you found out that that walking causes you not to be a runner. The fact is that from the time I started running 52 years ago, there were a number of narcissistic bigots out there that believe that the only way to run is to run continuously the way they do it. They're wrong. When it comes to the marathon, they couldn't be more wrong. I take a group over to Athens every year to run that original course, and we were in a museum about 10 years ago, and I saw a clipping on the wall of the original marathon race, Athens, Greece, 1896, in the original modern Olympic Games. Well, it was in Greek, so I brought over our guide, and she read this to me. The quote that will live forever in my memory was, "Every one of those original marathoners walked significant portions of that marathon. Walking was part of our sport from day one. I'll bet you that those runners considered themselves runners, and you should too."
You might have answered it just a second ago, but I was wondering if there's any sort of ratio between speed that I'm running and the speed that I'm walking, but
no.
You're just saying that doesn't work.
The question was, is there a relationship, speed to walking, speed to running? No, there's not. And again, I see this every week when I'm running with our groups. The walking spreads people out. And that's because everybody should be walking at a pace that allows them to recover. Don't do a long stride when you walk or when you run. Yes.
How do you condition to get better? Do you longer intervals, faster intervals, longer distance?
Okay, good question. I didn't finalize this speed portion of this talk. In a nutshell, the question is, how do you get faster? Well, the first and most prominent way to improve is to increase the length of the long run. I've done a number of surveys on those that used to run 20 miles before they joined our program, and then they went up to 26 with our To Finish program. Average improvement, 15 plus minutes just from going to 20 to 26 miles. But we have a lot of folks in the program who have run 26 several seasons, and they'd like to improve, get a personal record, or qualify for Boston. We've got a lot of Boston qualifiers. And what's interesting is a lot of these people started out 4 or 5 years ago getting off the couch. And then 4 or 5 years later, they're qualifying for Boston, doing walk breaks. But what we do with those is we suggest going up to 29 miles. The difference between a 26 longest run and a 29 mile longest run, 3 more miles, 11 plus minutes of additional improvement. So there's a huge benefit there. The other things that will help, and first timers should not try for a time goal. So please, if you're a first timer, don't even think about this. But once you've run one and would like to run faster, the form of speed training that I found beneficial for marathon running is 1 mile repeats. And the schedules are in my books, but the point is that you start with 4 of them. You run 30 seconds per mile faster than you want to in the race itself. You walk 5 minutes between each. And then on each successive workout, which is done at first every other week, and then later on it's done every third weekend, you increase by 2 additional ones until 2 weeks before the marathon, you will have done 14 times 1 mile. Yes, that is a tough workout. But so is running a time goal in the marathon. And what that workout does, better than any other form of speed training that I've found for the marathon, it puts you into the mindset and body set that you're going to be in at about mile 21, 22. When you feel spent and yet you still have some distance to go. So by pushing through those fatigued states, in the workouts, you're able to do the same thing when you get into your race itself. The other elements you'll see in my book, one is acceleration glider drills and cadence drills. Those help. They're very easy, no puking involved. You know, it's fun, and it can. Those are done on short runs. Another component on a short run day after the acceleration gliders is a race rehearsal segment. So for those that are trying for a time goal, I strongly recommend that you have a 2 to 4 mile segment on a measured course. You time each mile and you try various manifestations of the ratios that you would need. For example, let's say that you were shooting for a 10-minute time goal, 10-minute per mile time goal. That's a 3-in-1 ratio. So the first mile, run 3 minutes, walk 1. Second mile, run 90 seconds, walk 30 seconds. And then you could go on the third mile to run 60 seconds, walk 20. All of them are 3-in-1 ratio. And you'd be surprised, more and more people are now finding that as opposed to 3-in-1, they're running a good bit faster when they go to 90-30 or even 60-20. Give it a try. See how it works. You'd be surprised. Yes?
So on the run-walk part, you run when you're going through the race, do you run as fast as you feel like you can for that time and then slow down?
The question is, how fast do you run on the running portion? You do not run as fast as you can. You'd be surprised how little you lose when you take a walk break. For example, someone running a 9 minute per mile pace using a 4-in-1 ratio, run 4 minutes, walk 1. When they do their walk, we've actually done a number of surveys to find that the average person loses 16 seconds. That means that he only has to pick up the pace by 4 seconds every minute when he or she is running in the 9 minute per mile range. So again, you're not running near all out. You are running faster than you would, but the biggest problem we have is people feel so empowered after that walk break that they take off and go too fast. So anyway, the thing is that you have to practice this, and that's why we have the race rehearsal segment built in so that you can see how it all works.
Why do you caution people from taking long strides, either walking or running?
Because there are a lot of injuries. The question is, why do I caution people to not take long strides walking and running? And the answer is that there are a whole lot of injuries that occur due to long straddling. A whole body of research is showing in running that as runners get faster, their stride length shortens. The key to running faster mechanically is quicker turnover rate, not stride length. Now, this is true for distance running. If you are a sprinter, it's entirely different. And if you have a chance to set the world record in the 100 meter, it's about stride length. But if you're running the mile or up, it's not about stride length, it's about turnover rate. And the cadence drill is what will help you do that better than anything else. Sadly, a lot of folks try to get ahead of their folks in the pace groups by using a power walk and get a series of injuries. One of them is the anterior tibial muscle in the front of the shin. Another one is the tendon behind the knee. A third one is the hamstring. Another one is the butt, piriformis, pain in the butt. Anyway, those things happen with too long a stride length, and you don't have to have them. Shorten that stride. Yes?
What is your philosophy about stretching?
What is my philosophy about stretching? We have some laughs because this is...
10 years running.
Absolutely. The question is, what is my philosophy about stretching? The answer is, I'm going to absolve you, my children, of all guilt for never stretching again. Because, believe it or not, there's not a single study anywhere showing that stretching is beneficial for distance running. This is an old wives' tale, maybe an old husband's tale, that has been perpetuated over generations for no benefit, because there are quite a few studies now showing very clearly that distance runners who stretch have more injuries, the injuries last longer, and they don't tend to ever heal up if you stretch. So without any benefit whatsoever, and a whole lot of problems, you don't ever have to use that time at the beginning to stretch or afterwards. You can take a nice gentle walk for 3 to 5 minutes as a warm-up, ease into your run with a little more walking during the next 10 minutes, and you're good to go. Yes.
I'd like to put in a plug, however, for Pilates. And Pilates is yoga, not in association with your actual long-distance run, but I think is a beneficial, it's an active form of stretching that strengthens and lengthens. So therefore, it's a good complement to distance running.
Be careful. And I say this because I am on the front lines. I get about 30 people a day who come to me with running injuries. Sadly, a lot of them come from yoga and Pilates classes. And the point is that you need to have an instructor that knows what they're doing. The variety of instructors is all over the place, and sadly, a lot of them don't really care about your running at all, and they push you beyond your limits. So again, go to the right instructors, but otherwise, be very wary because there are a lot of injuries in yoga and Pilates.
I've read your books, and I've read a couple of them, and I thought that the one exception to that no stretching was in the IT band.
The question is about using stretching for the IT band. The stretches that are used for IT band are sometimes quick fixes that can be used during a run if the IT band tightens up so that you can continue. The better fix to IT band is to use much more frequent walk breaks so that it never does tighten up. But if it does tighten up, there are certain stretches that have worked to allow you to go on. They are not going to help healing. It's just that they are coping type stretches. But that's okay to use the IT band stretches if you tighten up.
Okay.
Jeff, weight conditioning. Is it helpful?
Question is about strength training. The bottom line there is that I do not believe that distance running is a strength activity in any way, shape, or form. To document this, all you have to do is look at the physiques of the winners of any major marathon anywhere in the world. And I can tell you from having run in the Olympics at the world-class level, none of those distance runners spend an hour in a gym during their lifespan. It simply isn't part of the culture. Now, if you and the thing is that I truly believe that what distance running is an inertial activity. In other words, you're trying to just keep moving. And so what you want to do is align yourself so that the ankle does the work. The ankle is a very efficient mechanism. It doesn't tire the muscles out. It doesn't strain the tendons. So the secret is to keep a relatively short stride with your feet low to the ground and let the ankle do most of the work. And then you don't need any strength because this is a mechanical type activity. Now, that said, exercise in general is good for you. Every hour you exercise, you get 2 hours or more extended to your lifespan statistically. So if you like to do strength training, and it's not interfering with your running, because sometimes it does, especially if you do leg work, then it's fine to do it. Just as it's fine to do cycling and swimming and rowing, even though they're not going to help your running, but they're good for your health. It's good stuff. The only cross-training mode that I have found to be very beneficial for running over the years is water running or aqua jogging in the deep end of the pool with a flotation belt going through the same range of motion with your legs. What the resistance of the water does is force your legs to find a more efficient path so that you eliminate a lot of the little flips and turns that we all tend to have. Yes.
Supposing you did not train with your method and you have an injury, how long do you suggest waiting and how getting back into running?
very politically astute wording of this question, and that is that suppose that one did not use my run injury free program, walk break, run walk run, and got injured. Then how long should you lay off? Well, there's no exact answer there because every injury is different and there's so many variables, particularly how long did you run on the darn thing and injured it further. So, you know, I really can't answer it, but I can tell you what the principles are. First of all, that it usually does help to have at least 3 to 5 days off to get the healing started. The key is to get the healing started. Second step, treat it. Treat it immediately. If it's a tendon injury that's near the skin, ice massage is very powerful. If it's a muscle injury, usually deep tissue massage works. If it's a joint injury, often anti-inflammatories can help, but talk to your doctor about that. The point is that get some treatment going on it. And blood flow is usually ultimately the thing that's going to help more than anything else. One of the little techniques that Sarno uses and I've used with a lot of my clients is when you've got an ache or a pain that sort of kicks in with this TMS thing, when you start to feel it coming in, you start talking to it. Okay, knee, I know that it's the reflex brain that's shutting off blood flow to the area and causing this to hurt. I'm not going to let you do it. Open up the blood flow. Come on, open it up, open it up. Sounds silly. It works. And the reason it works, you're in the conscious brain while you're talking to it. And so therefore, you start to take control away from the reflex brain. And then this whole action has a lot of psychic things in terms of opening up blood flow. This has actually been demonstrated in research, so it's very good. Now, the other side of the time off for it is that you need to stay below the threshold of further irritation. Most of the injuries that I've worked with through the folks that I have helped have enabled them to continue to do running in some form. It may be only 5 to 10 seconds of running and the rest of the minute walking. But if you can stage your running and walking in a very conservative format so that it doesn't get worse and it seems to be getting a little bit better, then you're going to be able to run in a lot of cases through the injury. But stay in touch with a good doctor who wants you to continue running.
I have one of your earlier books, so I'm going to be doing my first marathon. And it's not in the States. It's going to involve a lot of hills. What method, what training program should I focus on to conquer the hills and not let the hills conquer me?
Okay. I actually do have a number of mantras and things like that that have been used very abundantly by our runners to get you through the hilly portions. The secret on hills is to conserve your resources by walking more frequently up the hills and slowing your pace down. You can monitor this by your breathing rate. If you're starting to huff and puff, walk. And walk as long as you need to get your breathing rate back under control, and then don't run as far as you were running on the flat. For example, if you were using a 1-1 on the flat, run a minute, walk a minute, then going up the hill, do 20 seconds running, 40 seconds walking, or some ratio that's around in there. And then if that doesn't work, go down to 10 seconds running and 50 seconds walking. Do what works, but be more conservative on the hills. And use your mantras. I can do it. One more step. I love hills. In Athens last year, I was running with a group of our folks, about 15 of us, and we were starting into the last section of the more steep portions of that course. And I was getting a couple of whiners there, and I didn't want the whining to infect any other folks in the group. So I said, instead of whining, what we're going to do is say some positive things. So we had a few things that we were doing. As we were coming up the final stretch, I said, okay, now while we're running, we're going to say, I love hills. Come on, say after me. I love hills. So anyway, we went through this routine for our 30 seconds. We were doing 30-30. And as we were coming up the last portion of it and started our walk break, we went by this British guy, and he turned over to us, and because he had heard us coming up behind him, and he said, "I don't believe you." But, you know, mantras serve another purpose. They do allow for some fun to occur, too. And so have fun with people. Questions? Yes?
I love the run-walk for getting through the longer distances. How do you incorporate that? Or do you, for like 5Ks, 10Ks, shorter things, do you still use it? Or can you...
Question is about how do you use run, walk, run on the shorter events. I already mentioned about how most people who tried it both ways when running the Magic Mile time trial found that they ran faster, usually at the halfway point. In 5Ks, the most common way that people walk is every mile. They usually walk for 20 seconds to a minute at the mile. Some people go about every 3 to 5 minutes. You should experiment and see what works best for you. And the longer the race, however, the more frequent you would want to take the walk breaks. A lot of folks in half marathons will run the first half of their half marathon at a pace, at a run-walk-run ratio that they would use in marathons, and then during the second half, they just run more and walk less. So there are all types of things, but you should try this out and see how it works. Yes?
Just wanted to build the comment about hill course. Part of the program, too, is the hill repeat.
Hill repeats have been a time-tested method for building the strength in your legs that you can build. And whereas normally there's not a whole lot of need for strength, when you run a hill, you do need a little bit of strength. It's not much, but you can build every bit of strength you need by running hill repeats. Simply stated, what we usually do in most of our programs is we schedule the hill repeats on a Thursday. The Tuesday would be the race rehearsal day, and Thursday would be the hill repeat day. And if you're looking for a book that actually schedules all of the elements, it's the year-round plan book. And the problem with this book is it tells you exactly what to do every day of the year, so you don't have any more excuses. I mean, what are you going to do? The hill repeats start out with only two of them, and you'd pick just a moderate grade, not a steep grade. You would run with a quicker turnover rate as you go up the hill, and then you would walk down the hill. And then as you increase through the season, you would add an additional hill each workout until you reach the number that you like. But again, as you proceed up the hill, keep shortening the stride and picking up the turnover. And this is a great hill technique that'll give you control over the hills and more strength also. It's okay to huff and puff during the second half of each hill repeat. Questions? Any other ones? Yes?
How would your program transfer to speed walk, running, walking 12-minute, 13-minute miles?
Okay. For even recreational walking for long distances, there were a couple of folks that came up earlier who are going to do the three-day thing. I think it's 20 miles each day. Quite honestly, I'm not a big fan of that because a lot of people get burned out on exercise for life through that event. It's so arduous for them. I mean, seriously, even when I was training for the Olympics, I never ran 20 miles 3 days in a row. I mean, it's really arduous. But the point is that you can save your legs, save your tendons and ligaments on things like this if you'll put shuffle breaks into your walk. Now, my regular walk is sort of like this. In other words, I'm moving at a decent pace, even if I'm looking more like a mall walker or something. But the shuffle break is like this, baby steps. You just shorten your stride, you're still moving, but you're relaxed, you're not having to put out much effort. You put the shuffle breaks, about 30 seconds each one, every 3 to 5 minutes going throughout. And the principle is exactly the same. Even if you're walking at a fairly comfortable pace, if you're going to go 10 miles or whatever, you're going to have some significant fatigue in those muscles because they're being used constantly exactly the same way. So by breaking up the intensity or regular use of the muscle into a series of segments like that, then you gain control over your fatigue, just as walk breaks do it for running.
Okay, thank you.
Yes?
So I have kind of two questions. I'm assuming that you want to stay aerobic in your heart rate the entire time, whether it's walking or running. But what do you do at the end of your run? I'm not a big fan of stretching. You don't really talk about what's an appropriate cool down.
Okay. The question is about a cool down after a run. What I recommend is easing down during the last 5 to 10 minutes of your run, particularly if you've been going at what is for you a faster pace than usual. So you go down to a really nice easy jog for at least 5 minutes and then walk for 10 minutes, and just walk very gently, but keep moving, because the walking serves to pump the blood through the system and helps the heart. It's a very, very effective pumping mechanism in squeezing the blood back up to the heart. Yes?
I just want to point out, Suzelle's being very modest. The Galloway program here in Cincinnati, I mean, I joined it a few years ago. It took me a while to understand. I thought, how can you run slow and then run fast? But they incorporate the hill repeats. They incorporate the mile repeats. And if you want to get faster or whatever, I mean, it's all there in the program that Suzelle designed. So.
Suzelle and all of you group leaders do such a wonderful job here. It's cozy groups that are fun, and I'm not saying that everybody agrees to everything everybody says. That's what creates a lot of the fun. But the fact is that this is a wonderful, fun program. What we're into is staying injury free and making ourselves healthier. Team building together, and a lot of fun. It's great.
Jeff, please, except going at this book. I'm Mr. Suzelle, by the way. one of the things that Suzelle has incorporated just recently with Debbie, and one of the ideas we came up with, was we have a victory party at the end of every session.
Part of the fun.
And the one that's coming up is at the 21st?
Yes, at May 21st.
And so anybody who's in our group now, or anybody who's been in our group since the very first day, we invite them back. So we want everybody there, if you've done it before or all the way through. So we've built a great big family, and Jeff's been a great part of it. And gosh, there's so many people here tonight that have been with us for all 10 years. So it's just incredible. So
I'm just going to break in 1 second, and then people can continue to talk to Jeff, ask questions, but they're also... some people who want to sign up for the program and talk to Suzelle a little bit more about the specifics. But before kind of break into that, a lot of familiar faces, a lot of new faces, which is great. I was talking to Larry a little bit earlier, and we were saying November 2001, and that is one when we opened, and the first time when Jeff was here. And Jeff has been, you know, just someone who's by your side, as we like to say, from start to finish. And I think we had a banner that first year that we were here, that we had this huge banner that we put up and said, from start to finish, we'll get you there. And I guess we say we've been getting each other there for 10 years now. So it's a great relationship. It's been a great relationship with Suzelle and Larry, and it really is all about the friendships you make and coming together to join in this thing they call running or run walking. And whoever asked the question,
it's running.
whoever asked the question about what you say, you know, what do you say to the person who kind of denigrates you for doing that? I think Jeff's answer was perfect, and then just say to them, and if you don't like it, well, go away, because we're perfectly happy, you know. What else did I want to say to you tonight? Thank you for coming. When we started this, I joke that I had hair and it wasn't gray, and now I have a lot less and it is gray. But no, thank you for all for coming out tonight. Suzelle's going to have more information about the program. Jeff is still going to, you're not catching a plane, are you? Sometimes we have to usher him off to a plane in Dayton waiting. And that's it. I'll shut up now.
Before Suzelle goes on, though, thank you, Jeremy. Thanks so much for your support. Well, this is so super.
Thank you. I mean, literally, every year.
There are a couple. Let's give Jeremy a big hand. A couple of quick things. Motion tracks. Have any of you used the motion tracks downloadable? It's music with walk breaks. They have a free program for 30-30 and 1-1. They've added some additional programs now. Anyway, people tend to really like it, so that's a good one. There's another app that is, this will actually give you some tips that I have recorded, but there's another app that is called the Galloway Ultimate 5K app. I think it's about $4, but it actually coaches you through a 5K season. And I coach you. I recorded the voices every day of your workout. So it tells you what to do. It has music in the background. And the innovation here is that the producers, Low Fit, actually speed up the cadence when the pace is supposed to pick up. So if you're doing an acceleration, it'll start out with a slow pace and pick up the beat and so forth. So anyway, it's a fun thing.
It's on iPhones.
Yes, iPhones, absolutely. Yeah, it was amazing. It's when it was launched, within a day, it moved up to number one on the health and fitness category. A lot of interest in the 5K. A couple of other quick ones. We promote the Breast Cancer Marathon, Jacksonville, Florida. It is a wonderful event. 100% of the entry fee goes to breast cancer research and care. It's just a great event. There is a new event that is helping the Wounded Warrior cause for our veterans, and it's the Freedom Half Marathon, Norfolk, Virginia, November 11th through 13th. I've got some stuff up on this. And we have recovery flyers. I know that none of you need this, but if you do, here it is. Latest and greatest tips. Suzelle, your turn.
All right. Well, thank you again. And Jeff's not going anywhere, so if you do have some things that you need to do.
Thanks for joining us on the Extra Mile Podcast Galloway Edition. Please visit our website at www.thegallowayextramile.com to see the show notes for this episode of the podcast. You can email us with your feedback about the show at thegallowayextramile@gmail.com. If you'd like to send us your audio comments to let us know how your run, walk, run marathon training is going, please send an audio file to thegallowayextramile@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks very much for downloading the show, and we look forward to joining you again soon on the next edition of the Extra Mile Podcast Galloway Edition. Walk break.
Back, Daddy.